Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Cooker, spelt Cooker, pronounced Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water from your kitchen tap, sparkling water too these days, which is fantastic. We've got another special for you.
Woohoo!
Today's guest is Sedge Beswick. She is Managing Director of Scene Connects, which is a company which puts brands together with influencers. She knows all about the world of Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And
thank God, because I know absolutely nothing.
She was also at ASOS when they set that up, and she was the one who ran all the online stuff there, which was huge, if you remember, back in the day when they started to run their campaigns. So this is a little journey through us understanding how much Kim Kardashian gets paid for one Instagram post. And
I can't believe it's only a fiver.
All right, let's meet her. This is Sedge Beswick.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, right into Dear Lovejoy.
Sedge, welcome to my kitchen. Thank you very much for coming in today. Like all my guests, I bought you a present. I thought, what do I get you? Because you're obviously, you know, your social media and everything else. So I've got to go different. And I've got you something which is bang on trend. I've got you cannabis tea.
That is impressive. That is on trend.
And Sedge, when
get
we finish...
a few likes for that.
I thought you could Instagram it. By the end of this interview, I think we've got to set up a business. I keep saying to Mark, I've got to become like a celebrity drug dealer, because that stuff, I can't believe how much that costs.
Go on, how much was it?
Have a little guess. Go on. Let's play this game.
Body and Mind, cannabis tea.
Right, it's just not, it just looks like normal tea in tea bags.
$14.99?
Oh, yeah, close, £16. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, really, for that? And the woman in the shop went, I went, £16?
I don't really want to get at her.
Literally, said, I went up a key. I went, £16? And she went, you can use the tea bags twice. But apparently that's going to calm you. There's no THC bit in that. So you're not going to get high. I said, is she going to get high on this? And the woman went, no. And I was like, well, I'll take it anyway.
Could be a different kind of podcast, couldn't it?
Apparently, it's going to relax you. So that's it. So, Sedge, where's that name from? It's unusual. Is it short for something?
Yeah, short for Sarah Jane. I used to trampoline as a kid. And my trampolining coach basically said at the age of 8, no one will remember you with a name like Sarah Jane. And Sedge was born.
Really?
Yeah. My mom and dad were like so anti-nicknames. So if like my teachers used to put Sarah on a school report, my mom would like send it back circled red and be like, her name is Sarah Jane. And now she's like, how have you got Sedge?
Sedge, do you like it?
Yeah.
You sort of got like a Twitter, Instagram handle before they even existed. Really? Yeah.
Kind of. I'm quite boring though. I feel like I don't practice what I preach.
Right. Okay.
But I'm easy with a name like Sedge. Again, there's no one taking those handles.
Okay, let's talk about can you do a quick summary? Because your work life has been so immense, really, and quite complex. You've done quite a few things. Can you give us a quick summary of how you got into it and where you're at now?
Yep. So at uni, I worked for Red Bull for 3 years. In my second year, I entered a competition to win $25,000 to throw a party. Didn't win, but that company was Three, the phone network. And so straight out of uni, they offered me a job. Was there for 18 months, which was brilliant, but I was like the youngest person by like 7 years or something insane. Very like male heavy business. And my degree was always in fashion marketing. So I wanted to get back into that. So I did just under 5 years at ASOS. accidentally through Nike met my investor, and 3 years later, got Scene Connects.
So ASOS is an interesting place for to start this conversation, because when ASOS came along, it was the social media was one of the reasons why it exploded and became such a huge company. You were in charge of that.
Yeah, so I was the first person in the social team. And then by the time I left, there was 32 people, which it sounds like really well thought out and really thorough. But actually, like, I got D in my GCSE French, and I used to like Google Translate tweets for the French Twitter feed, because we didn't have any headcount. And I like remember first getting a French editor, and she was like, who the hell has been running these feeds that are appalling? And I was like, me. But I've also been running like the US, Australia, the UK, and it was much more around just like getting content out there.
So what was ASOS like before you arrived there then? What was their marketing strategy?
To be honest, anyone had access to anything and anyone could post whatever they wanted. So it kind of worked for the studio team.
Yeah, but they must have been doing sort of like just normal magazine types.
Oh, yeah. So they have the ASOS Mag, which actually only just got closed this week.
No, but I mean, they must have been taking out adverts in normal places.
Oh, no. Everything ASOS did was all, it's not anymore, but it used to be all online. This was like pre even Facebook ads existing. They didn't do experiential. Everything was like native to where their customers would be.
So I remember it hitting Twitter was the huge in those days, wasn't it? And it was a sort of ASOS Amy, and everyone had to have ASOS before their name, and all the people in the office were tweeting, and it became quite exciting, wasn't it? Because they'd tweet each other and you'd end up following all the ASOS people.
Yeah.
I mean, exciting times.
And you get so much access to what's going on, what it's like as an employee to work at ASOS, but also what brands were coming, what type of product they'd have, how quickly things were selling, just by like the biggest advocates of the business were employees.
So was it just really experimental at the time? Could you do anything you wanted to do?
Before setting up the agency, I didn't have a clue what a budget tracker was. Because at ASOS, I'd go like to Nick, who was the founder, be like, I really think we should be doing something like live on Twitter, and I think it might cost 15 grand. You're like, go on then. And there was never any kind of strategy or full-blown thinking and rationale into that budget and what it would deliver in terms of results. Because it was ASOS and because our consumers were literally on social all day, every day, thankfully, nine times out of 10, it worked. But a lot of stuff didn't. And that's the stuff that we learned the most from.
What didn't work?
Oh my God, the best one I ever did was a live Twitter game. And we had loads and loads of technical problems. And one of the models turned up actually high as a kite. So we had to kind of get her off this live Twitter stream. And then it was basically like, it was for Valentine's Day, and it was a version of Take Me Out. And the first question to one of the models was, if you weren't a model, what would you be? And he got his whiteboard and he wrote M-O-D-L and put it up. And I was like, no, the question was, which I sent you a month ago. And I was like, it's quick, let's go to the next question. And it was, what color would you be and why? And he scribbled literally on a piece of paper, put it up. And I was like, just can this. I'm not spending like Tuesday evening or whatever, spending my time doing it. And it was hard to then explain internally.
What always frustrated me, especially back in those days, I started an internet TV thing or content thing called Channel B years ago with Simon Fuller, and I'd sit in meetings, everyone says it was a bit before its time, and maybe it was. I mean, literally things used to buffer in those days, and it's not the best way of throwing content up, and it was sort of pre-YouTube-y type thing. So but what people used to say, I'd be sitting in these meetings and they would start telling me facts and figures about the internet, and I'd sit there going, no one knows. This is just, you're telling me this bullshit. And there's so many people who've come along and they're still doing it. I'm still sitting in meetings about podcasting constantly, and people are telling me facts and figures. Now, I know we'll talk about data in a minute, because I know you're big on data.
Love a stat.
but nobody knows anything, because things are changing so dramatically, constantly. So if you do your... When I was at Channel 4, they decided to... well, I'm still at Channel 4. I think I am. Last time I checked, I was at Channel 4. But they decided to do their whole online stuff based around Pinterest. Did you know that?
I didn't know that,
right. So they're online.
I don't spend a lot of time on Pinterest, I'm probably.
Right, so for a long time they did it at Pinterest, and we were all there looking, this didn't really work, but that's the model they went with.
Right.
And they just thought that was what it is to, and it's like you can't put your eggs in one basket now that it's changed back to a normal sort of website. But
But
people get obsessed with stats and figures and things, don't they?
And it also depends like who comes into that business and gets excited and saying Pinterest is the next big thing. Again, this might have changed, because to your point, what you knew yesterday today isn't relevant today when it comes to like online digital. But at ASOS, it would take like 6 months for something to even get a click on Pinterest, and the product would sell out on average in 7 days. So it's totally pointless churning the amount of content you had to churn out on Pinterest.
Right. Okay. Doesn't work that way.
No, not at all.
Tell us about data then. You love data.
Love data. Love a nerdy stat.
Go on then. Why do you like data so much? Because it...
Yeah, I think especially, I always have. And actually one of the things I hadn't, like, again, talking about my GCSEs, which was really unexciting, but I scraped by a C in maths and I really wish I'd spent more time listening to my actual teachers who would teach me the things that was so crucial to like every day. But at ASOS, I was so, you don't realize how much data you have around you, and you can see like the impact every single Instagram post has. And that's how I could get the new headcount signed off and how I could get more people into the team and proving what works. And now more so than ever with influencer marketing, it's like, yeah, this is really cool. I'll send someone up top and see what it does. And you're like, no, like if you do it and you do it the right way, actually it's a brilliant marketing tool. Yeah. But a lot of my competitors are still going, God, we had like 10 really cute Instagram pictures and isn't that brilliant for the business? And you're like, God, this is dull. So yeah, love a stat.
Well, so explain your agency then. How does it work?
So we do influencer marketing. So we work with the brands and we basically help them to do influencer marketing the right way. So that could be a campaign. So Christmas for us usually ages me quite dramatically. Everyone wants their product at front of mind when it's gifting season. But we also do like always on strategies. So we work with like Nike, Jo Malone London, very.co.uk. We've done some stuff directly with Instagram. Yeah, and we've worked with everyone from...
What's always on?
Oh, sorry, I talk in jargon. Always on basically means you get a set budget for a year and then we will dial it up or down based on the influencers that is relevant to like their trading calendar. So it could be we've got a shit ton of curtains that we need to sell. And Mrs. Hinch, who is a homeware influencer, is redecorating her house. Let's partner with her that month. But she counts as like a celebrity influencer. Whereas the next month could be we need to promote Puma, Reebok, Nike, Adidas for a retailer. And you'd actually just get people at a micro level who are gifted product in exchange for content.
Is it generally fashion?
Because I spent most of my life at ASOS, most of our clients are within the fashion space, and it's really easy because you can have bespoke tracking on every single influencer's piece of content, and you can also add pixel tracking into their social handles, which also means that you can not just see last click.
Sorry, what's pixel tracking?
Sorry. It basically means you can add a bit of code into their social handles. And so if I see your t-shirt, but I actually need a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to decide whether or not I want to purchase it, you can see the purchase journey that that's had through that influencer's handle.
Scary stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like we're being tracked.
Have I ever been tracked?
No, we're being tracked.
Oh yeah, totally.
Everything about...
Totally.
Is it true that Instagram's listening to me and then posts ads of what I'm talking about?
I get asked this a lot and I genuinely have no idea. Like I have my personal views, which is like, how am I being served this ad myself when I know that I wouldn't Google something like this? Like I'm not brilliant with animals. They terrify me. And then I'll get like an ad that is distributed to me on Instagram around like hypnotherapy for being scared of animals. I'm like, well, I know I haven't Googled that because for 30 years I've been terrified of animals.
I tried it once. I just kept talking about watches and then I got served a load of adverts on watches all over my devices, by the way. But I just was thinking that's an easy one, isn't it? I should have said roller skates or something.
Also, you can see what Instagram predicts that you're interested in your insights. Okay. I'll do it with you later. But I collect Nike trainers and one of the things that I get served is Adidas. And... you know, my Nike is a client. I've worn Nike forever. And I'm like, why on earth would Adidas serve me that?
I'm more of an Adidas man myself.
Are you?
Yeah, but why would you collect trainers?
Because I'm the worst girl possible.
But why would you? Like, I can't...
They're so pretty.
Yeah, they are. But why do you... How many do you have?
Well, actually, just moved in with my other half and I've had to have a massive call. So like the East Finchley charity shops right now must be...
Full of...
Yeah, I got rid of about like 40 pairs of Nikes.
40?
Yeah, and I've only got about 60 or
70 I struggle with the concept of collections of any description because you have them and then what do you do with them and where do you store them and what's the point? And when do you... Yeah, but you've got the opportunity to wear 40 different pairs of trainers.
Yeah. I wear like primarily black outfits, so then I can like pimp out my feet. Doesn't matter how much weight I put on, they're always going to fit me.
But do you, that's an interesting way of doing it. But do you always, so do you often change all your trainers then? Because there must be a pair that you think, oh,
I mean, like not in a day.
No, but I mean, you're always thinking, well, I'll have another. Do you genuinely wear them all?
I don't wear them all, but I go through periods where I'm interested in like a different type of silhouette or a different colorway. So like every pair that I have now, I do wear at some point or another.
So what are you wearing at the moment?
I'm wearing the most boring shoes. I've literally got basic.
Got Converse on.
Basic trainers.
Come in black Converse. Brilliant. Okay. So do you work with the influencer or the brand or both? Are you connecting them both?
Yep. So we will help the brand with what they do and right. how they do it the right way. But we will then, so they might say we've got budget X, and I will say these are the influencers you should work with, and we will then join those dots. And that could be anything from like nano influencers, which is like around 2,000 followers.
Okay, what's in that? Right, 2,000
followers on their chosen platform.
Is that the same as a micro influencer?
Micro's next, which is around 10,000.
So you go nano, micro, and then fully fledged.
So on and so forth. Yeah.
Fully fledged influencer.
But yeah, and we go all the way up to celebrities that have got 2 million, 3 million followers, depending on what the business needs.
And let's be crude, can we? How much, what are we looking at? If you're a nano influencer or a micro influencer, what are you sort of, how much we get paid for a job, or what's your yearly salary? What do you think?
I hate that this is my answer, but it does massively change.
Come
because
on.
It is, I will, like, all for it. But it depends on how that person's got the following that they have. So like Love Island's a bit of a flash in the pan. You can get good cash for about 12 months afterwards. And then it's kind of, you've got to do your job to build your momentum still. Micro or nano are usually gifted based on the brand that they're partnering with versus being paid. But then the cost does come down to the length of contract. And like, you'll know all this, like if you're on a 12 month gig versus like a one-off post, you can get a better rate for your money. It also depends on usage rights, how much media spend that you're adding behind it. But my like general rule of thumb for a campaign, which is like anything from like 6 weeks to 3 months, you should be taking around 3-5% of that person's following. And that also then depends on their engagement rate.
Okay, put it into pound notes for me. What we're looking at?
Pound notes. I'll use Love Island.
Yeah,
because
go on, do
I've
Love
never
Island.
Watched it before.
Haven't
and I'm
you?
Now addicted.
Oh yeah, see that's the
I've
problem.
I've got so into it this year.
I watched it the first time was 3 years ago, and I've got teenage daughters, and I was like, well, you know, as I always say on this podcast, you've got to go to your kids. They're not going to come to you. So I went and I engaged with that and RuPaul's Drag Race and everything else and started watching all their TV shows. And I got so addicted to Love Island. And then the next year they were studying for their mocks and I was watching it and they weren't. This year I decided I'm not going to get involved because it's too addictive. So I haven't bothered watching any of it at all.
Oh,
this
God,
year.
I can't stop. But someone from about 3 years ago who would have now 1 million, 1.2, most of the deals that they get will be like a one-off post.
1 million, 1.2 followers, is that
sorry,
what you're saying?
Sorry, yes, yeah.
On Instagram?
Yeah.
So everything's Instagram?
Most of it's Instagram.
Okay, all right. So how much were they?
So they'll get like £1,000 to £2,000 maximum for a post. And the people that are coming out now will get between like £4,000 to £5,000 a post with the same following, but they can right. literally do that for about 6 months.
Okay.
But when the
mail and the papers, the tabloids are saying these guys are going to earn sort of between 1 and 2 million quid or 1 and 3 million quid coming out,
yeah.
can they do that?
Yeah.
How?
So one is the paid partnerships, which for today's world will primarily be on Instagram.
Right.
The second will be guest appearances, so turning up to nightclubs, getting some selfies with some people. But the third will also be on brand deals. So you have like Dani Dyer from last year who did her In The Style collection. She doesn't get paid for the collection, but she takes a percentage cut of anything that she sells. So she's commercial and savvy enough to make sure that every time she is papped, going to a party, going to an event, that she's wearing that product that you can then shop on In The Style.
Do you worry that it leaves a nasty taste in a lot of people's mouths looking at influencers and how much they get paid? Are you worried about that? Do the brands worry about that?
Do the brands worry about it? The brand, I think it's more so that people don't really know what they should be charging or what they could or should be paying people. So it's actually more the other side where I've sat in some meetings and they're going, right, we paid X this much money. I'm like, you massively just got ripped off and we could get the same person for, you know, a tenth of the price, but they've just gone out not knowing what they should be doing and should be charging. I think as long as you think about it the same way you would in a traditional way of like ad space, making sure that you're buying media, it's the same thing. You're getting the reach and you're getting that awareness, but you can actually attribute an end.
But what I mean is the newspapers love to go, oh, some influencer asked to get a discount in a hotel, blah, 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 ice cream van the other day or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I turned them down. And everyone's like, yeah, you turned the influencer down. And they're thought of by the tabloids and maybe the general public as the bad people because they're trying to get everything for free. Is that a brand's not aware of that?
Yeah, but I always try to work with people who have a skill set first and foremost, and that could be an Olympic skier, it could be a musician, it could be.
Okay.
And so actually you can, again, understand the reason as to why you're partnering with that person. Also, a lot of influencers, their skill will actually be that they are a videographer, a photographer. They may actually guest write for GQ. The ones that do pain me is the, like, 21 years of age, 3 boob jobs already, lip fillers. And it is very much like I expect the entire world to give me everything for free.
So you need another category, don't you? Because if you've got influencers, you're throwing them all in together.
Yeah.
Olympic skier with Love Island with 21-year-old boob job girl.
Yeah,
you know, you're throwing them all in together
with
one word. And then we can't work out which is the people we want to follow, really, I suppose.
Exactly. But the example you gave before was an influencer called Elle Darby, who was really well known from asking for a freebie in a Dublin hotel. The guy was actually an influencer himself, and he seeded that story to make sure that he got his hotel coverage, which is the latter part that most people don't know.
Right.
So, like, everyone's playing a game their own which way around.
Interesting. I was listening to you on a podcast, your own podcast. Tell us what your own podcast is about first.
So it's actually exactly what we're talking about. So it's Verified Views, and it is I speak and meet really amazing people constantly that have good stories, that have got their following for a reason. And it's basically getting their voices heard, which is, it could be anything from the Mac twins, who are actually Love Island DJs, who've now launched their own gut health product, through to like Frankie Bridge, who talks about mental health. And yeah, it's just making sure that we can then say to our brands that we work with, like, these are these amazing and brilliant people and opinions that you guys could be part of.
Okay, so you were interviewing this guy called a fashion blogger called, or influencer called Galux. And he was saying, you got involved in this conversation about people not doing it right.
Yeah.
And he, this sort of, as far as I can work out, he said, I've put in all the hard work.
Yeah.
And I'm genuinely love fashion, and I've genuinely care, and someone else has come along, bought a load of followers.
Yeah.
And they're getting the work, and I'm not happy about it. Surely that's just always going to happen in this industry. It
will. I think those that have done the 24/7 graft, which is the part of social that people forget, like, it is hard work to build a community, to make sure you're, like, maintaining the nuances of the platforms. They're always going to be slightly upset around people that can overnight just have 100,000 followers, and they are then starting to out them too.
Love Island contestants, they've done it properly.
Yeah.
They've just gone on telly.
Yeah,
so they've,
yeah.
So they're doing the same stuff. They're cutting the corners.
They are cutting the corners. And again, even you're not watching it, but like Molly May, who's in this year, she had 20,000 followers and was a micro influencer before she went in. She's been so smart because she's wearing bodycon dresses every single day. And it's all based on the fact that she knows it's in the style that are looking for people that they can do collaborations with afterwards.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So again, you've kind of got that savviness around you. Like, do I think that someone like Galux would go to a Love Island event? Nah, absolutely no chance, because he wants to make sure that he maintains his longevity and his credibility within the space for what he does. And he is a brilliant photographer. He is a great stylist.
Right.
He's got something that he can fall back on if he decides that actually being on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok isn't for him.
So what are the ones? We mentioned Instagram. That seems to be king now. Twitter seems to be not the place to flog stuff anymore. Is that true?
Yeah, not so much. It's turning more into like customer care for brands.
Right. Okay. So Instagram's, because it's picture led, is where. What about, you mentioned TikTok there, Snapchat, Facebook?
So Facebook still has its place and it still has its audience. So it is an older, it is more video led. So it's around like 35, 36 plus. TikTok is the first Chinese social platform to hit 1 billion users. It's a really young audience base. You only have to be 9 to sign up, whereas most social platforms are 13. that's the first one where I'm like, I'm way too old for this.
TikTok. Yeah, I signed up for TikTok. Annoyed the hell out of me because it just kept sending me stuff all the way through. I quite enjoyed watching it for, you know, it's kids watching kids lip sync and dance. But it was quite good fun for a while and then kind of got boring.
Got
after
bored,
a day.
Moved on.
Yeah, well, it's just I'm too old for it. So that's it. Whereas I'm not too old for Instagram and stuff because I like watching it all. Right, so is it still buoyant? I mean, is it getting bigger, this industry, do you think?
Would you like a stat?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, go on, please.
Been desperate to wheel these out.
Go on.
No, I haven't. But 2017, $2 billion was spent on influencer marketing, and that's set to be $10 billion by the end of next year, which shows it's not going anywhere. 75% of Gen Zs want to be YouTubers, bloggers, vloggers when they grow up. It's just becoming more normalized, more so than anything.
So what's it like being an influencer?
I don't know, because I've not one.
Yeah, but you know them all. What's it like being an influencer?
Their opinions really vary. Some absolutely love it and it's what they've been desperate to do. And, you know, I think they're 8 godsons that are twins and they just want to be on YouTube constantly. And I'm doing the other bit of like, please don't. Like you said you wanted to be an athlete or an astronaut, like focus on those bits, kids. Mm. Whereas some love going to the parties, some find that part exhausting. Some people actually love the fact they've got a platform to show the video content that they can edit and they can curate themselves. Other people pay someone else to do that for them because they just want to be the face of it. So it really does vary based on the person that you meet and how they also manage to get the following that they got.
You go on. So you can buy a following.
Yeah, but also even just in the sense of like someone who was on it really early doors versus someone who is on TV every single weekend, so subsequently they build a following that way.
Yeah and it's hard work, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's what people don't realize, and I meet a lot of influencers in my job and a lot of them fail.
Yeah,
because you know, you meet so many people who go, I'm trying makeup, that market is so oversubscribed now, isn't it? The makeup market, the fitness market, it's the diet market, the cooking market. I mean, there's a lot of people out there trying this stuff now because they all think it's just easy money.
Yeah.
The hours you have to put in, you've got to constantly post, and you've got to work out how to post and when to post. I know it's not digging holes in the road, but it's quite intense, the amount of it. You can't switch off.
And it's the same for, like, again, my knowledge comes from doing it brand side. Red Bull for 3 years, ASOS for 5 years, three. And like my dad can just about send an email. And him trying to explain what I do, and he's like, right, so you get into the office and you sit on Facebook. And I'm like, no, actually, we turned out like 8 pieces of content on Facebook. We made however many YouTube videos. We spoke to such and such around making sure that they were wearing the product when they were on stage, because there's like a private gig on a Made in Chelsea set, which means the reach is going to be this. And he's like, yeah, don't get it. and it's like really understanding the amount of platforms that you're looking after, making sure that your tone of voice is consistent, making sure that actually the product you're promoting, there's still units in stock, making sure that you're like, the data's doing what it's supposed to be doing off the back of it.
Yeah, because the thing about it is, in your job, you can actually tell how many items, if it's clothes, definitely, how many items are actually sold, which is immediate feedback, and you know how much you're going to charge for that.
Exactly. And I used to say when I was at ASOS, like, you know, younger, a bit cockier, I was like, if I've managed to get the traffic through to the site, I've done my job.
Right.
It's then up to the buying team to make sure that it's the right price point, that the delivery solution is right for a customer, that you've got the right units behind each piece of stock. And now being this side, I actually don't get that level of data. I can't go into the back end of like a Nike and go, right, you've got however many pairs of size 5. So I'm going to choose people whose following, I hope, have got a size 5 feet. Like, it is more just, and I also actually think over time, people have got more responsive to seeing something on social and going, actually, I really want it. I'll just go and purchase it.
Do influencers need an agency like you? Or are brands going straight to them?
Brands do go straight to them. One, you have to be willing to give and be at a point, I think, to give like 20% of what you're earning to an agent. And it gets obviously more complicated when you get into the fun of like usage rights, where that content will be seeded and distributed. And I think some influencers want to be able to say they have an agent because they think it sounds good and they think it adds that kind of level of credibility to what they're doing. However, I don't really think you need an agent until you're like 100,000 on like your key chosen platform, because the hustle is part of the fun of it, is that you should be commercially savvy enough yourselves to note to post when you're supposed to be posting and to be able to have those conversations.
How's your job? Is it exhausting?
Yes.
can you switch off?
That's probably one of the things that I'm terrible at. And as soon as it gets busy, my team always, and my team in particular here, always say I have a Bernard's watch. And I just love going, right, it needs to be done. So I just crack on and get it done. But I think one of the things I have learned and probably learned the hard way is when you do have those down times. So like July and August, people's bosses, their line managers are away. Things take longer to get signed off. I have to make sure I do go and like get a blow dry, get my nails done, go on holiday for a weekend and get that kind of R&R back in.
But you must always be consciously thinking, I've got an idea that because it's creative what you're doing,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Because there's no rules to it. There's no laws at the moment. You can try anything you want. It just keeps. So I've never got on with Facebook because I don't know where it starts and stops. At least when I go on a Twitter feed, I know what the latest post is and I know how far down I can go. Same with Instagram. Facebook just is a mess to me. I'd go on it and I go, I don't know where I'm supposed to stop. And so I'm in a loop of, I don't know, MMA fights or something. I'm like, I don't even want to watch this. Why is this being fed to me constantly? Or something bizarre is happening on it. So I've never really got on with Facebook, but it's that frustration of you don't know where it stops. And with your job, you don't know where it stops. You could keep going till 2 o'clock in the morning every day, thinking of ideas, working out what's going on.
And it's even the other side. Like I could keep doing new business bits and pieces. I could still keep writing articles. I could go and meet another 10 influencers to chat to them around how they can budget plan better, how they can negotiate harder. Like you do have to draw a line in the sand some days and go, right, no, I'm switching off and I'm off to do this.
I was talking to somebody who worked at flight control the other day, bringing in all the aeroplanes, air traffic controller, and he said the greatest thing about his job, he turns up every day, plays computer games. with all the alarms in place, it's pretty tough to crash the planes. But he said the best thing about it is when I leave, I can't do any more to my job because I need the tools in front of me in the planes to fly around. And if I haven't got those, and I think the beauty of that, like I come away from, you know, don't work the hardest in my life, I must admit, in these days. I used to work quite hard. Mark's laughing at me there. But I did used to work hard, really hard. But I, you know, with the podcasting, there's always a little bit more I can do. There's a little bit more research I can do on Sedge here. And, you know, I could do whatever. So you never know when quite to switch off. Whereas that sort of job to me just thinks that must be heaven to know when you can actually switch off.
Big time.
Tough for you to do.
Yeah, I'm really bad at it.
Let's talk about social media in a whole, but before we go into that, what I've noticed recently is that the companies have taken back control over there. So it was a free-for-all. It was the Wild West. We were going, hey, I'm Tim Lovejoy. I'm on Twitter. I'm going to make a load of money on your platform. And then I'm going to go to Instagram and make a gazillion pounds by promoting something on your platform as well. And now the brands are going, the Twitter and Instagram or something, unless you're paying us to promote it, we're not putting you at the top of the queue.
Yeah.
So you've now got the promote buttons and stuff like that. They are aware that they want their cut out of this as well.
Of course they do.
Right. How has that changed the landscape?
It's incredibly hard for either a brand or an influencer to actually build a following now. And you really do have to bring something completely different to the market, which is why Mrs. Hinch, who we were chatting about earlier, has done so well. She was the first person to talk about how to clean a home on Instagram, and I think she's got 2.8 million followers now.
Wow.
Which is absurd. Like,
I thought you were making her up. I didn't know she was real.
No, excellent. She's a real person. Right, okay. Mrs. Hinch, yeah.
Right, fantastic.
There you go, if you want to have some cleaning hacks.
Yeah.
But again, you've like, the market is so saturated for fashion, beauty, tutorials, to your point, like Joe Wicks has done it. There's...
Another Joe Wicks, will there?
No, but there's another, you know, 300, 400 in each city who are trying.
Yeah, but they're going to have
mimicking and copycatting what's out there.
But they're going to have to buy their way into it. That's what I'm saying is Joe did it by just hanging out of his window, making little videos.
And it was early.
Well, people like me saw it and said, come on, let's get him on our show and stuff like that. But there's so many people doing that now that they're going to have to buy their way because Instagram want their cut and so do Twitter.
Yeah. And some influencers... are paying for their content to be seen, and some brands pay for influencers' content to be seen.
Right.
Brands obviously have to pay for their content to be seen. So it constantly means that the follower growth, it takes harder / may not even be possible to get to that point. Secondary to that is then what you look at in terms of more like vanity metrics of how many people liked this, how many people viewed it, will not be what it was 12 months ago. And in 12 months time, it won't be what it was unless you are slapping a lot of cash behind it to get it seen. But you know, from a platform point of view, people are addicted to Instagram.
Yeah. Has it changed your business at all? Are you having to say to brands, all right, we've got the influencer for you, you're going to pay this, but you, if you promote them, you're going to make more money out of it. Yeah. You're going to sell more t-shirts.
We occasionally, it depends on what the objectives are of the campaign, but we will occasionally have a pot of media budget that we would add behind those posts to make sure that it's seen by the right people. So yes, it's changed in that sense. We're also trying like different things. So actually, if you want mass noise and entertainment, meme accounts at the moment are brilliant to work with. And because they're not creating or capturing any of the content themselves, you are literally just sending them an asset and paying for it to be distributed onto their channel. And meme accounts post up to like 50 times a day.
Yeah.
Which is most of them are like 14, 15 years of age, just...
I was talking to my, because I knew you were coming on, I was talking to my 17-year-old twin saying, what are you watching, logging onto at the moment? And they said, it's basically Instagram and Snapchat. And in Snapchat, they're being fed now, in Snapchat discoveries, basically all the news via Mail Online, celebrity there. So the papers have got back in, haven't they? The big brands have come back in the back door with Snapchat.
Yeah, they've had to change what they're doing and how they're doing it completely. There isn't a journalist that I know that in the last 12, 18 months hasn't complained that it's not going to be around for the next generation and that they are struggling to make ends meet or they're trying desperately to find a new job because what does it look like? I do think as well, like the medium. So I think a lot of people are getting bored of this, like, constant being thrown a different asset from a different business at you all day, every day, which is why there is a rise in podcasts, long form media. Snap's just launched, Facebook's launched Create series, Instagram's got IGTV. I've actually hilariously forgot what Snap's is called, but they're all focused on long form content to get people onto the platform and to...
Will they compete with YouTube?
Yeah, that's what they're all trying to do.
But
yeah.
Will they? Will it work? Of course it will, I suppose.
It will. And I think the benefit and the upper hand that YouTube has currently is from an SEO point of view. And that's what you don't have with an IGTV, with a Facebook Create.
What is the point of social media now?
Said like a true dad.
I'm obsessed with it. The thing is, I've discussed it on here a lot. This is why I'm asking you, because I'm interested in your take on it. I spend a lot of my life thinking, why the hell am I looking at this constantly? Why have I got such a thirst for these stupid pictures and flashing lights and ridiculous memes and stuff, you know? And I don't know what it is. What is the point of it?
Well, Zuckerberg's point is to bring people together and to keep them connected.
Yeah, we know that's
whilst
bollocks.
Also, yeah, exactly. However,
whilst also ripping them off and stealing all their data, their identities and stuff. Yeah, go on.
But yeah, from a brand point of view, it's a really easy way to speak and to engage with your consumers with where they're spending their time.
From a whose point of view?
From a brand's point of view. From an influencer point of view, it's a way that they can.
So why do what's in it for me? I'm trying to think this through. Because I think we've got to get a new take on it. To begin with, it was like, hey, look, we're all going on. We're being funny.
Yeah.
And then it was like, now it feels a bit like a shop. But I'm not saying that's a bad thing because it's a new way of shopping. Because you go online and you look at what the people are wearing or whatever, and you think, oh, or whatever's happening, and you end up buying for that. But then it's sort of news. Is it? I don't know. I'd sort of go there for a bit of news.
Yeah, I still think Twitter is predominantly for news, and people do go, if there is, they want an opinion or they want to know what is really happening, that channel will take over, and it's got, the purpose is absolutely there. I think like Pinterest's purpose is around like the future planning, those big moments, curating what your kitchen's going to look like when you buy your first house, what your wedding's going to look like. I think at the moment, Instagram is quite scattergun. Like it is, their focus is primarily around teens and just making sure that they are consuming a lot of their time. And some of that stuff has to change too. Like, but parents also have to get savvier around the amount of time that their kids are spending on the internet. And the Snapchat, the reason why kids are using it is because they're cyberbullying each other with messages that get deleted straight away. So the parents can't see them swearing at each other after school?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not supposed to be that cynical about social platforms when I'm on these things.
Well, no, I think we should be, because you say that you're talking about Twitter there. I thought Twitter was on the wane for a while, and I really did, because I felt it. God, when I used to go on Twitter, the interaction was huge.
Yeah,
Every single comment I had was like, wow, this has just blew me away. And the ego side of me was phenomenal. But then the trolling was absolutely off the scale as well, and the amount of grief I had from that, which I kind of... That sort of intrigues me now. And I thought, like, this thing's on its wane a bit here. I think people are bored with just... And Instagram had come along. And then Trump arrives. Well, he's always been there, but he becomes president. He's, like, the most powerful man in the world. Mm-hmm. And Twitter, they should give him 50% of all their earnings, because Twitter's now so important.
Yeah, because you're just waiting to see what he does next.
The next president who arrives... in America, if he's not tweeting it, all the American public are going to assume he's going, we want to know what you're thinking every day, all day long. That's what our leader should do.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always been I always remember saying this story to everyone. When I first started tweeting quite a long time ago, I was tweeting during football matches, and I used to get so many people tweet me and go, you're not a football fan, why are you not watching the match?
Oh, really?
Then, because I couldn't be arsed with all the grief I was getting from football fans, I stopped tweeting during matches, and then people would say, you're not a football fan, you're not tweeting during the matches. The shift was incredible. No, it was as it went through, the shift was incredible, because my opinions on football, people wanted to know what they were, just so they could have a go at me or agree with me, but they wanted to, so it kind of changed.
Yeah. Well, what do you tweet about now? Do you still as you used to?
Yeah, this is my problem. That's why I ask you what it's about, because I'm intrigued by it all, because the comedy element seems to have gone a bit. I'm trying to work out what's the purpose of me tweeting. If I say something, people are desperate for me to muck up because I've got profile. So that's always a problem with this sort of way we are there. A lot of celebrities are on there, as far as I can see, virtue signaling. Look how wonderful I am. I care about the world. And I'm like looking at them going, oh, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? drives me nuts, that stuff. And I'm just thinking, what really is the point in going on there? And so I sometimes go on and try and gauge opinion, and I sometimes go on there to try and collect information, because I like doing that.
Yeah.
But I've now got the Twitter, what's the word called? Mark, what's it called when you can't throw a dart? When you can't throw a dart, it's called the yips. That's it, the Twitter yips. So the dart yips. So I go to send a tweet and I go, does anyone really care? And then I go, God, Jesus Christ, do I really want to send this? And then I reread it and think, how does this help me?
Yeah.
And so I sort of started thinking, what is it? So I promote all my podcasts and my TV shows, and it's just become a tool for that, an advert basically. And I'm not really putting a lot of opinion on there. And when I see celebrities and people putting a lot of opinion, I think, why are you bothering? It's an echo chamber in here anyway, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, but again, like, it depends on the person. It depends on the area. To bring Joe up again, like, Joe Wicks can talk about the latest hit that he's just done. And it is a broadcast medium in the sense of saying this is what it is. But actually, whilst people might not be engaging because they're seeing so much of it, other people will still take that away and go, right, I can do that hit class at home tonight, test it out, give it a run. Whereas I just think, again, when social was in its kind of heyday, even like 5-6 years ago, people just wanted to show that they were also engaging and that they had liked and retweeted that tweet to make sure that their friends and followers knew that they'd seen it. Yes. And actually,
look at me, I'm watching something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they might not have even been reading it. We're all doing it together. Yeah.
The worst one I have ever done, and I've had some like really bad social blunders, like stupid things, but at ASOS, I went to the NFL and the team used to take it each weekend in turn to run the social.
Yeah.
And I was with my dad, like, we're from just outside of Manchester, we're about 5 or 6 pints in. And I was like, shit, I was meant to post on ASOS today. So I get my phone out and I was like, regrammed a picture of a girl wearing some ASOS jeans, holding a dog. And the caption was something like, whatever the girl's name is, love your jeans, cute dog too, can we borrow him? Put my phone in my pocket, thought nothing of it. And I put a typo and I put, cute dog, can we bottom him?
Oh no.
And we and we had something like 20,000 comments. And they were the most ridiculous things I've ever read, where it was like, this is why ASOS can do so many discounts, because they rape dogs. You're like, what is wrong with you?
But this is the problem. It's been the amazing place for things like anti-vaccine. They love it on there because they can all join together and all discuss it together. And then conspiracy theorists, they love it because you can find, you know, if you're a conspiracy theorist living in a little village in Shropshire, you're going to...
That's where I'm from. Did you know
is
that?
It? No, is it? All right. Oh, that's brilliant. So you're in Shropshire. All right. Your name's Sedge to begin with, and you love a conspiracy theory. You're going down the local pub and everyone's ignoring you. You can go online and you can find millions of them on there who'll agree with flat earth or didn't land on the moon or whatever other things you can get involved in. And I suppose that's sort of a lot of people are on there for that reason, I suppose. But you've got to be... I always worry about the influencers because that was that guy came... James, the makeup guy, James.
Oh, James Charles.
James Charles.
Yeah. Oh, God, I was horrified throughout that entire ordeal.
Well, you better explain it because I can't remember the whole story, but he fell from grace, didn't he? What did he do?
So he was he is an aspiring makeup artist, uses YouTube to show the different ways in which he curates his looks. He was friends with another YouTuber who I think was like in her 40s and they used to hang out all the time and he's like 15, 16, which personally, rightly or wrongly, I think is quite weird anyway. Mm-hmm. And she then decided to go on an attack to him that he wasn't responding to her messages, that he has all gone to his head. And he managed to lose something like 3 million subscribers on YouTube overnight. A woman of her age, first and foremost, just should not be doing that to someone in the position that he was in. And second of all, like, he did a brilliant, and he obviously had PR support to help him with his kind of almost comeback YouTube video, which was him going through his WhatsApps, actually showing, oh, I've remembered it. She'd launched her own beauty brand and he was promoting one of her competitors in a paid partnership. And she just basically went on the attack that he's got no loyalty, that he doesn't value his friendships, that he only is out for himself. And I honestly sat there watching that unfold thinking he's going to kill himself. His entire life has been built on YouTube. He is now being trolled left, right, and center. And you know, if you put yourself in that space, that you are going to get some hilarious comments about yourself, some really abusive comments about yourself coming through. And yes, you get built to that to an extent. You do not get trained on in 24 hours losing millions of your subscribers and being bullied by other people in the space, which is ultimately what it was. And he obviously got the support that he needed. He has come back. He's now got more followers. She's lost more followers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know the end of the story. Okay, that's good. And what about the brands? Are they must be quick to pull out of something like that. If somebody says something, they're going to lose their brands quickly.
Yeah, and I do think businesses need to have a morality clause in all the contracts that they have. I don't think they... do. I would be surprised. I'd love to know what like the percentage is, but you've got things like Logan Paul, the YouTuber who filmed someone committing suicide in Japan. You've got PewDiePie, who is, you know, was constantly creating YouTube videos, and he was assigned to Disney. And actually the time it was taking brands to react has improved. People know that they are putting their brand and the trust in that influencer to kind of continue that message. But there's just got to be more due diligence into what they have previously said, what they stand for. If it's long-term contracts, if they're of that level, you should be spending a lot of time with them understanding their views.
Well, I was listening to you on the other day. You were talking about influence should have a social responsibility and a social conscience. It's a tough thing to ask someone to do that if that's their living. I mean, if someone like, just say Coke comes along to you and you go, okay, there's a lot of sugar in these drinks, and I know I've got a lot of kids following me.
Am I
going to do it or not? By the way, Coke, you can sponsor this. I haven't got a social conscience. But even that, if you say you're going with one of these fashion brands, which is more interesting, who are not interested in sustainability and not interested in not worrying about the sweatshops and stuff, you know, it's kind of, if you're trying to earn a dollar, it's a tough ask, isn't it?
It is a tough ask. But then again, it's the other way around. Like, the brands have to do their due diligence to know that they are working with the right type of person. Like, again, the Galux podcast, he buys himself Balenciaga, Dior, Farfetch, Matches Fashion. All of those brands make sense for him to partner with. When a Primark comes knocking on his door and they offer him, you know, heaps of cash, like, you should know as a brand that person isn't aligned to.
Hold on, the top of the tree brands aren't necessarily that ethically correct.
No, but it's more like knowing where he spends his time.
Right.
Like, I mean, I don't know what his views on sustainability are, but you know, if you are a Venetia Falkland who is all around sustainability and Annick Heaton, you wouldn't then expect that a Boohoo and a Misguided would be the brands that would get in touch with them. And that's the bit that's scary. How many brands would go, oh, she looks like she's doing well at the moment. Loads of people are talking about it. And you're like, well, they're talking about her because she's just done the sustainability contract with Very Denison, which is a manufacturer in the UK who do heaps of, they manufacture all of Nike. They do all the Premier League football kits. And their whole point is around making it more sustainable.
I got paid a stupid amount of money for a supermarket once years ago. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was five tweets. And it was like, what, they want to pay me that much? Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. And
yeah,
it's like, it's tough to, you know, I'm not proud of myself, but it's tough to turn that down when that's your living.
Exactly. You know. I do get that side of things. And equally, like, I get asked questions the other side from influencers, and like, if there's an algorithm change, my WhatsApp's crazy. People are like, what am I going to do for my career? Or if it's like, this brand's just come knocking, I actually hate them, and I've done a couple of tweets in the past, and they're like, but this is literally like me being able to feed my kids or pay my mortgage or whatever. You're like, you gotta, sometimes you've got to take the rough with the smooth a bit. And
if you wanted to get a Kardashian
to
wear your t-shirt, how much are we talking there? What sort of thing?
So Kim's around, my mate Kim.
First name, I like that. That's good.
She's around $250,000 for a single post.
Wow.
Which is why she doesn't care when she's like, I'll just take the cash and promote booty, fit lollies, whatever it is, and I'll give a load of 15-year-old kids diarrhea for life, but it's fine because I'll sit here with my personal chefs and my PTs and I'll look banging for it.
Yeah, it all came unstuck with that. What was it called? That documentary on that festival, Fire.
Yeah, Firefest.
Firefest. Great documentary, but it all came, the influence came a bit unstuck with that, didn't they?
They did. But one of the things, which is what my whole bit around, if you do influencer marketing the right way, it does work.
Right.
So I do think, again, like the Gigi Hadids of this world, like they had a job to do to make sure that what they were promoting was legit. Did they do that? No. But Firefest, if it existed, they sold out of all of their ticket. Well, 95% of their tickets in 24 hours. Every business wants that. So they had, for what they were trying to sell and what they were trying to create, they did partner with the right people. But the end game...
Yeah, but in fairness, the right people, I'm saying them, they should have gone, what is this festival and does it actually exist?
Completely. You know? And they definitely should have then donated the cash that they got for the content back to...
Did they?
No.
Of course they didn't.
Somebody spent it.
So where do you think the future's going then for social media? And I mean, you alluded to it a bit earlier, podcasting seems to, I mean, a long form seems to be quite an important thing now.
Yeah, so there's still, from a video point of view, businesses, brands aren't creating enough. So there is definitely still a move on video content being created. Long form is absolutely something that's starting to be promoted and supported from an algorithmic point of view. Again, whether it's Facebook's version of Create, but also podcasts, where you can listen when you're commuting, you can completely zone out. You know, look at what Serial did with podcasts. There's 300 million listens that they have.
Brought a lot of people into, didn't it?
So, completely. Yeah. And like, this is the thing I always find quite interesting. Like, podcasting is nothing new. Like, what episode's this for you? Like 100 and something.
Yeah. So it's nothing new, but still a lot of the country are not listening to it. There's a very small amount of people who are listening to podcasts.
Yeah. And I do think it is the last, like I've seen, especially from the briefs we're seeing, the last 6 months has been what is this? Should we be doing it? And how can we get involved in it? And it might be the way of saying, is it Kuka?
Kuka.
Yeah. Sponsoring you guys and knowing that they're going to get the coverage that they need, versus it could be a brand saying we want to have our own and we want to get paid people to be on our podcast to promote whatever the topic is. So there's different ways in which you can like dabble and experiment in it. But again, from a data point of view, that's what's going to be interesting for podcasts, for brands.
Where do you think podcasting's going, though? Because you've set up an agency. Clearly, you see it's a growth area.
Yeah, so we have ConnectsCast as well, which does podcast production and also podcast sponsorship. Again, if you can find the right podcaster sponsor or you create the right podcast, the results can be brilliant. But it's, I think the thing that people forget with podcasts is it is hard work. Like you've had to research who I am, what I do, what my views are, what I will talk about. You've then got the production here going yeah. on. It's not that you've just like rocked up or having a little chat and then it's on the site. You then have to promote it. From a brand point of view, again, it's then media spend to make sure it's being listened by the right type of people. So it is an entire new marketing channel. And like anything, like there are so many brands that are terrible at social. There are so many terrible podcasts out there. And it's kind of having to shift through the crap to get the stuff that's good.
I think our podcast is good, but Mark and I are pretty shit at the admin and marketing because we're doing it for fun.
Yeah.
And this is the interesting thing. We started it for fun. Just because we used to work together in radio and we're like, what should we do? We want to work together again. So we started this podcast and we've really thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. But yeah, it's a lot of hard work for a hobby.
Yeah. But and that, again, that's the bit with like social. People don't realize the graft that goes into yeah. making this stuff work and making yes. it successful.
Yeah. Okay.
What's your favorite podcast? Sorry. I know it's meant to be the other way around, but.
My favorite podcast, I go between a lot of them. I listen mm-hmm. to Joe Rogan and Sam Harris and Bill Burr. Actually, Conan O'Brien's one now. Yeah, it's just so brilliantly funny. I love listening to that. Mark's always texting me over with different ones to listen to. I listen to a lot of the British ones as well, Adam Buxton, all that lot. So, I've got so many that I listen to. I've just given up listening to things like Serial.
Yeah.
I listen to Serial, but I've given up because it's always like, oh, could they have murdered or couldn't they? And it's like, yeah, we all know they did. You know, it's like.
And series one is great. It's then hard to keep that momentum going.
They just became a bit of an anti-climax at the end. Yeah. So I did Jamie Lang and Francis Bauer's podcast, Private Parts, the other day. I enjoyed that. That was a good chat. I like going on other people's podcasts as well. So I enjoy long form conversation. I just like sitting and talking to people. I love it. And I think when people get into podcasts, that's the feedback we get from this always. It's like, there'll be some of our listeners won't know who you are, Sage, but they'll listen to
I'm going to vote that all of them won't know who I am.
And then they're going to go, wow, that was really interesting. I found out a load of stuff about, 250 quid now to Hakim Kardashian, it's kind of an interesting stat. Where do you see the future then of social media? What's really going to happen? MySpace making a comeback?
Oh my God, imagine. Bebo, MySpace.
Because they're going to die, aren't they? Because everything has to die. One day we'll be looking at our iPhones. Remember we all had Nokias?
Yeah, Nokia 8210.
So one day something's going to come along. And so one day Insta and Facebook. I mean, Facebook, is that on the wane? What do we think?
I've seen less and less through from Facebook, but increasingly so, like we said before, it's a pay-to-pay space. So brands are still there. People are still advertising.
People start hating Zuckerberg,
way.
Though, don't they?
Yeah.
He's got to get rid of the company, I think.
I think it will happen eventually.
That's always the problem. If the guy at the top people start falling out with and not liking. I mean, people are turning
that
on
trust
Apple.
Trust has gone.
People are turning on Apple now. I think the big mistake Apple made really was when they launched the 8 and the X at the same time. Was it the 8 and the X? Anyway, I don't know. They released the one, the X and the 8. I think it was. And then they had two different price range. Up until then, we all had the iPhone 4, the iPhone 5. We were all together. It was like a community. And now suddenly, hey, if you've got a lot more money, you can have this one. But if you don't, you can have that one as the new one. And I thought then you split the market into those with have and what those who don't have not. And the marketplace changed. And I think that works well with their computers. But with their phones, they should have kept on going that. But maybe I'm overthinking it.
Yeah, I also think their trust was lost a little bit when it was leaked about how from a software point of view, they change the interface every 12 months so people feel like they have to upgrade.
And the batteries.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that as well, yeah. So is there anything you think that's going to happen? I mean, Twitter's still buoyant whilst Trump's in power and...
I think the things are... Brands will start experimenting more in podcasts. I think influencers, people will stop going for like 50 and hoping one sticks. They'll choose like two or three that really are like working as an extension of their business, that are seen as their brand advocates, faces of the brand. I think there'll be more celeb stuff coming back through again because celebrities do have their purpose when it's brand partnerships. And I think they've gone, oh, look at all this budget. We'll just put it into influencers. Or maybe that didn't do what it needed to do. And it's remembering like, what success was supposed to look like up front.
You can't be a celebrity, can you? Because even if you're a celebrity online, you're not quite a celebrity.
Yeah.
Like if you're Kim Kardashian, you're crossing over the whole way because of your TV show. And, you know, that guy, James, you said James...
Charles.
He? James Charles. I didn't know who he was until he went to Birmingham and closed down a...
Yeah, that was insane.
Yeah, a shopping mall. But there was a lot of us who had no idea who this guy was.
Yeah.
So you're a star online, but you're not really... You're not Kanye or Kim or someone like that.
Yeah,
David
exactly.
Beckham.
And it's within your...
Yeah.
If you are into makeup and if you are on YouTube, then you know who James Charles is. Like,
yeah, so it's a little community of them. And I think they like to cross over into the TV world. Can I just ask you one question? This might be unfair, so you can tell me to bugger off, right?
Oh, God, what's coming?
I'm just going to ask you about ASOS because I was reading, because I went and researched it. It's apparently really declining. Its share price is down. And what's going wrong at ASOS?
So I haven't worked there for over 3 years, so I can only give an outsider's view now.
Yeah.
A similar thing kind of happened to ASOS in 2012, I think it was, when I was there, which is, you know, a couple of profit warnings thrown in. Retail is incredibly tough at the moment, one. Second of all, we've gone through this wave of fast fashion and people are more conscious shoppers now.
Yeah.
So sustainability is a big piece, like Boohoo have their own like recycling line that they talk about. So although they're fast fashion, they've still got a real voice within sustainability. Does ASOS have that? Probably not. I mean, they created an Instagram video that would not have happened in my day, which was them, the girls and their social team talking about all the things they're doing for sustainability. And it's like, we package up into the smallest plastic bag that we can fit the clothes into. And you're like,
oops.
Cool, why don't we get rid of the plastic bags?
Yeah.
Like, let's start there. Mm. I then also think, like, I don't know anyone who works at ASOS anymore. Like, I've still got a really good friendship group of ASOSers. The redundancies are off the chain at the moment. 80% of the marketing team has gone. The ASOS magazine has completely gone. A lot of the stuff that was around like brand love and brand affinity has been, you know, taken off. They'll have to rebuild once they've gone through this cull. But I think they've just had quite a few people that are there because it sounds like it's ASOS and it's fun. And with the time changing, they've got a new chairman, they've got a warehouse in the US that they've got to make work that took, I think, like 3 years to be able to open it. And I think it's in Ohio. I think there's just been a lot of sloppy mistakes that cost a lot of money. And
I go to talks quite a bit at the V&A. They do fashion talks and stuff, and I like going to listen to them. And a lot of the fashion stuff, they talk about sustainability. And one designer had left one of the big houses because they weren't taking it seriously enough. And he was like, no, I want to make sustainable clothes, and you can't do that in mass production. So I think it's moving that way. There was a chap from the Nike sustainability director, I think she was called. And she's to all the trainers, they're trying to get recycled goods into their new trainers. And they're also offering this brilliant thing, which is you wear like a subscription service for kids because their feet are growing so quickly, where rather than throw out the trainers, you send them back and they, so you have a subscription service.
That's
with
incredible.
Them.
I didn't know that.
So the kids all, you keep on, as your feet grow, you keep on getting sent a new pair of trainers, you send them back and then they crumble them up and they turn them into running tracks and things.
Amazing.
Because they can do that. But Adidas are on it as well.
Yeah.
Props to Adidas. I think that's street. But all the brands are doing it.
No, I do a lot.
They're all doing it. And so they're all trying to make themselves sustainable. And I think it's the big trend in fashion at
Completely.
The moment, isn't it?
And it'll be interesting to see which businesses do it in the right way rather than ticking a box to go, look, we've got a sustainability process over
But I don't want to go on for too long, but how does that leave Zara and Topshop and all the other ones which are fast fashion, as you, I think you just called it fast fashion. They're trying
Topshop's a beast of its own, isn't it?
Philip
Green.
Well, the thing is, without talking about him, but I mean, does this, because that's the problem with fashion. It moves so quickly. Everything's out of fashion. Even in the season you're wearing it.
Yeah.
Whereas you used to be able to buy a jacket or last you 2 years. Now it's out of fashion within a season. And
which is also the problem with social, because people wear things once and then they've posted on Facebook, posted on Instagram. They don't want someone to see it again.
So is this going to stop, do you think?
No.
Don't you?
No, because there's still the like vanity part of being a 20-something who is ASOS's customer base, Arcadia's customer base, Zara's customer base, who don't really want to be seen in the same thing twice. So yes, there's different ways to wear and different ways to style. That's why you've got rise in platforms such as like eBloggers and Depop, where people are selling those goods. You know, I don't think anyone on Love Island this year has worn the same thing twice.
Yeah, but I think people will rebel against it. I do.
I hope they do. But
I think it will. I think it's got to come. I think it's just, it'll take a couple of influencers or celebrities to
and there's got to be an education piece around it. That's the bit I think people don't really understand, so then they don't want to get involved and have an opinion on it or say what they're doing, because
maybe it takes a couple of articles where people go, I can't believe that man stroke woman has worn a different outfit every time I've seen them. This person is not sustainable. And they start going, oh, crap, I'm going to wear the same thing constantly. Yeah. And if we had a couple of journalists just decide to go down that line, maybe, then I think the world might change.
The Daily Mail going, oh, my God, can you believe that Kate is wearing the same dress twice? How dare she?
But I always find that so bizarre. I'm like, yeah, like the rest of us.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Jesus
Christ.
But
they should be stopped creating that kind of content, and they should be able to normalize, God, isn't it fantastic that she's wearing that very basic black dress twice?
Do you know what? It's a lot easier being a man on telly, because I can just turn up in black and grey and white and blue every time, and that's it. I don't have to wear anything else. Whereas a woman, you've got to keep on checking what you're looking like, because you've got the critiques out there discussing what you're wearing. No one cares. I just turn up in a t-shirt and they're like, doesn't matter what Tim's wearing. Yeah, exactly. Right, there are questions I ask everyone, so I'm going to quickly go through them. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
Oh, that was so quick. You said that a few times.
Yeah.
The one piece of advice, mine would be hire people that are better than you. And I think there's a real, I've seen it quite a bit at ASOS actually, where people didn't always went for someone who was probably the second best and employed them, because they didn't want to be, they didn't want someone below them to kind of be able to show off or to know something and for them to feel uncomfortable. Whereas actually the entire team is better. More people can do different things if you've got shit hot people underneath you.
That's really good advice. That's really good advice. What's the biggest mistake you've made?
So I knew this with these questions and I was really panicking about what they would be. And mine are like the time I went to a Nokia party and tried to have a dance off with Vernon Kay and ended up in hospital.
That's good. Well, did that really happen?
I have a scar on my chin to prove it.
Why was that?
Well,
did Vernon hit you? That's what I'm hearing. that's the headline.
I have two party tricks. One is that I can create a great horse noise. And the second is that I do the worm.
I'll do the horse noise for us.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah.
Okay, you can't look at me when I do it. It's so loud.
Well, you're sitting right across me. What am I supposed to do?
Okay.
Christ!
I told
Jesus
you
Christ.
Loud.
Wow. Yeah, okay, that's a party
that's
tree.
The
that's
first
good.
Time you've had someone do that.
When did you realise you could do that?
I have no idea how I know I can do that. Literally, I should have been like a kid's entertainer or something instead.
And then you can do the worm as well.
I can do the worm.
Well, clearly not though, because you end
not
up in hospital.
Not that well, no. My thing, I think, because I've always been like younger than most people in my like teams, and I've not at ASOS, but often been like one of the females. And again, I feel like it's a northern trait, but that might not be. My thing is like, I love to just keep drinking with the men and to show that I can keep up with it.
Okay.
And then I get to a point, I'm like, oh God, I've had like 11 pints and I can't even feel my hands anymore.
Okay.
And I went to my first ever work party where Vernon Kay was the host, and he was, you know, getting the crowd going, which he was obviously paid to do. And I said, I bet I can beat you in a dance off. So I went to do the worm, and there's actually a picture. It's a brilliant picture of me like literally face planting. And I stood up, realized there was blood. And because I didn't want to make a fuss of it, and because it was all like guys at this handset launch, I was flicking blood off me. And all the people around me had like sprayed blood on their white shirts.
Oh, nice.
And then the next day I went into the office with my hand like still covered. I woke up, my duvet stuck to my chin, like pulled it off. And it got to about 3 p.m. My boss was like, you absolutely have to go to A&E. Like me trying to pretend it wasn't happening. And went to A&E and I told them that I was actually in a dance-off competition.
Perfect.
And that I wasn't drunk. And yeah, had it glued together and some Steris strips on my chin.
You mentioned your job there. I used to love it. I worked for a while heading up an online team at a company. I'll tell you about it afterwards because I'm about to go now. And I loved it because no one knows. And I was at the situation, no one knows what we're doing here. So let's just all have ideas.
Excitement
of having ideas. And the first thing I used to say to them, and that's where I found out about cereal actually the first time, is I used to say to them, I used to sit there and go, who's seen what? And what's made them excited this week?
Yep.
And then they'd come up with these brilliant things because the world's so amazing at the moment.
Yeah. For all of ASOS's faults, the thing that they were brilliant at was everyone there was so overexcited, all desperate to build their own empire and all wanted to show off. And it could be their idea, what they would listen to, what they've watched, what their opinions were on this. And you would constantly be in a room going, God, I've not heard of that, or I didn't know that existed, or I haven't downloaded that yet.
But you must love it if you've got sort of, I don't know, whoever it is coming to you, Red Bull or something, I'm just picking a name out of the thing, or a brand, Nike or something, coming to you, hey, we need some ideas. You go, brilliant,
yeah,
let's do it. We've got money, we've got influencers, we've got the internet. What can we do? Let's see what's happening. TikTok, let's do something on there because we've never done that before. Or, you know, it just must be really exciting. Let's trial it. And then if you find a brand who wants to trial, which is a lot of the brands that you work with, then it must be that it's just such
they
an exciting.
They are fun. It is really, really good.
All right. Any life hacks?
Life hacks. I mean, my must have is that I always go to my osteopath once a week. It's like the only thing I do for me.
Cool.
Would you like an Instagram hack instead?
Go on then. Yes.
Never use over more than 4 hashtags because the algorithm basically thinks you're trying to spam and to get your content seen, even if it's pish. Post twice a day. Post as much video content as possible.
God, I'm just so bad at
again, full on gig.
it is. And I tried really hard for a while and then I thought, I just can't. There was one time I was at... at the NBA, they came over to play in London and the Little Mix girls were sitting in front of me with all their boyfriends. They weren't the same boyfriends they've got now, by the way, but this was a few years ago. And we were sitting there. We were at the O2, I think. And I was watching these guys and they were watching the game. Like, you've got 7-foot giant athletes in front of you and they're watching it through their phones and social media. And I remember at that time thinking, oh, I should do that. And then thinking, no,
I'm actually going to enjoy it.
I want to watch it. Someone just recently, I read an article on a woman who said whenever she travels, she never takes a camera and refuses to get a phone out and take pictures because it changes what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of an interesting idea as well.
I basically live in like a 70-year-old man's body. And the best part of that is like the last gig I went to was Leonard Skinner. No one's using their phone. I'm like, this is brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
I love all of you. Like, I can actually just watch it without phones swaying. I know that everyone is like immersed in the exact same moment, having the exact same view of it. Whereas like, you look at Lovebox, which I obviously did not go to, and everyone's got their Instagram shot as they're walking in.
But I must say, I do like the hype as well. When I go online and the hype, like Glastonbury or Lovebox.
Yeah.
I remember Liam Gallagher, was it last summer that it was really hot and Liam Gallagher came back and started doing all those gigs in North London. And people are filming it out of their window in their flats in North London going, listen to the noise and stuff. And it's like, wow.
That is true.
And I like the hype of it all. And I think that's the great side of social media. You get the access to stuff that you don't normally get to see. And whenever there's a protest going on, you can go online and watch it all happening. And so I quite like all that sort of stuff.
I just like to be able to see it properly.
Yeah, when you're actually there. Actually do it. Can you recommend a book? You don't read books, do you? You're on Instagram.
I do.
No, I love a book. No, you don't.
Have you read?
You can't. Your attention span can't.
No, I can.
You can't. You can't wait for the adverts in Love Island. So
I shouldn't have done that, should I? I don't watch Love Island.
So you can concentrate.
My all-time favourite book is Gang Leader for a Day.
Right.
Which is around Chicago in the 70s and an Indian kid who ends up being a gang leader for the day. I've read it 3 times. It's phenomenal.
Okay.
I won't tell you who wrote it because I can't pronounce the name.
Oh, okay. Can you watch TV without checking your phone?
I'm actually really not bad with my phone.
Come on, Sage.
My other half is horrendous.
Right.
And I think because I see him on his phone so much and then I see like the 20-somethings in the team who literally can't pee without using their phone. I average about like 3 hours a day, which given my entire job is on my phone.
I'm worse than you. I'm a nightmare.
There you go.
I'm such an addict, but at least I know I am.
As long as you commit it.
So when I've got when I've got my youngest child here, I literally have to put it in another room. Otherwise I start looking and I want to give her attention. And I just have to keep moving it away from me all the time. I like all the flashing lights. I do. And I'm on Instagram going through it all going, why am I watching? And now I'm starting to follow you as well. So then I end up following Galooks
Galooks.
I end up following him and going through looking at all his, and that's what happens.
It's like a domino effect. How did I end up 64 weeks into
it's so addictive. Yeah. So now I'm his biggest fan. All right, the final question, what's the meaning of life?
Again, I knew this was coming. So yesterday I started Googling what the meaning of life is because I've just never thought about it before.
You're so internet savvy. You think, I don't want my own answer. I'm gonna get one off the internet.
I was really intrigued as to what people, and I'd listened to different, obviously, responses that people have had on the show. And it genuinely isn't anything I think of. I think it is just like getting the most out of each day and just doing what you want to do and not what everyone else tells you you should do and want to do, and being happy when you do pop your clogs.
Well, that's good. Doing what you want to do is good. Yeah. That's what I say to my daughters all the time, the twins. They're 17. I say to them, I don't care what you do, as long as it's your decision.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just don't like other people making decisions for people. And sadly, that does come with completely social media.
Completely. And you're like, you see someone wearing something. Like, again, I've had a pretty similar feedback from my parents. Like, it's why I collect Metallica t-shirts and Nike trainers, and why I go to gigs with 70-year-old men. Like, rather than my mates who are 30 having lovely dinner parties and drinking really nice bread, I'm there with my pints.
Yeah. Sedge, listen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you for having me.
I learned a lot, which is always interesting. Good. And I hope you enjoy your tea. A nice,
yes.
Nice way to relax overnight. Switch your phone off and have some cannabis tea. Thank you so much.
Brill, thank
Cheers.
You.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sedge. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Mark, did you enjoy it?
That was great. Yeah, I actually now know what an influencer is.
A nano-influencer, a micro-influencer, and an influencer.
I genuinely had no idea what that all was. I sort of had like a basic understanding, but I didn't know the ins and outs of it, so that was great.
That's the new sort of shopping of the future, isn't it?
It doesn't sound fun. That's the thing. In the way that, you know, when you'd see it, as if I was a child now, I'd be watching that going, that looks amazing. And actually, it looks like hard work.
Do you know what? That's what I think about YouTubers. Everyone thinks, oh, it's easy. I'll just film myself and put myself online. I was with a wedding with Joe Sugg.
You name dropper.
You don't even know who he is, do you? Idiot. So I was at a wedding with him. We have a mutual friend at the wedding. And like, it's halfway through the night.
I'm having the guy from Madness?
Yeah, that's it. I'm having a great time, right? And I'm in the toilet, and it's a big toilet. So the urinals at one end. And
again,
the
showing off.
Sinks are down.
Big toilet.
Sinks are down the other end.
Money.
And Joe is filming himself doing, because it's noisy outside, there's a band on and stuff. So he's filming us in the toilet, well, not him, me, him, doing another link to post up because he's got to get his material together for YouTube. And I went, I won't say the other one, but I was with another YouTuber recently, turned up with two cameras and someone else, and he was like, I've got to find content today. They've constantly got to get content. So it's not just the easiest job in the world. I mean, it's a fun job, I imagine, but it's not the easiest job.
No.
People will look at you, Mark, and say, where can I get those shorts from?
And I'll say, I can't remember.
What's your relationship with social media like at the moment?
Mine, I'm struggling. Absolutely non-existent. People don't care what I think. I just press buttons.
The problem with me is I got my twins to take over my social media every Sunday.
I quite like that. I saw that, yeah.
I know, but now I prefer that than me doing it. Yeah. So I'd rather they just did it all the time, because it's quite funny.
There's a fresh angle on it, isn't there?
Well, they take the mickey out of me and just go, look, there's my dad doing this. And people enjoy it. And I think, well, that's better than what I'm posting. So, and they know their way around all the little gizmos and gadgets on Instagram and stuff, so it kind of is more refreshing than the stuff I'm doing. I think, you know, you can post up music to run alongside the, you're looking so like there's nothing there. Hello.
I look up little bits and pieces. I mainly look up and see what Liam Gallagher's doing on Twitter, because he's amusing, but I don't tend to use it too much anymore.
Yeah,
I don't even follow Trump. I just find it all I find the politics now on Twitter so depressing.
Yeah, that side of it's really started becoming monotonous, I think. The virtue signaling from one end, and the other one where people are all saying, look, please, please hear my opinion. It's really important. My opinion is so important. I'm going to keep telling you every day my opinion is important. And then the other thing, actually, I wanted to talk to Sedge about this, but when celebrities answer back to trolls, I think that's kind of just a really strange thing to do.
Oh, it's a totally pointless endeavour, and I should stop.
Because
doing
you look
it.
At the troll, and he's got like, she's got 20, 30 followers, and you've got hundreds of thousands, and you reply, all you're doing is amplifying that ridiculous comment. No one else, he's only got 20 or 30 people who could actually read it, and they probably won't anyway. So why engage with that? And you know why they're doing it anyway, because they're just feeling a bit miserable about themselves. So they're like, let's have a pop at the famous person or the celebrity or whatever. And then they go that. And I think by retweeting it, retweeting it, I think you're the one who's the one who looks stupid.
I'm also a bit of a deleter as well. Like I don't tweet much anymore, but I used to tweet and then about 2 hours later go, God, that was dull.
Yeah.
Get rid of
that. Well, that's what I've got now. I look at all the tweets and go, nah, no one wants to do that. No one wants to see that rubbish.
I just take it. I used to just take them off.
And then I write things. And I constantly do this. I write things and then I think to myself, that can be misconstrued. I can't be asked. And that's
the other thing. You've got to be very careful.
But there's a part of me which is thinking now, as a celebrity, unless I'm trying to flog something, which is my TV show or my podcast or something like that, what is the point? I've got more to lose than gain by saying something. So what is the point unless I'm going to get more followers from it? And am I going to engage in more followers with the crap that I talk about?
Probably not.
Maybe if I started, I should start tweeting about stuff that I don't engage with most of the time. I don't know, some fashion bloggers or something, or some makeup bloggers. Then maybe I'd attract some more followers.
Yeah, but then that's... Yeah, no, just stick.
But then I wouldn't be real. Then I wouldn't be real.
Yeah, exactly. Stick to what you know.
The most horrific thing, though, and I should have talked to Sedge about this as well, but too late now. But when I lost all my followers, you know, when they got rid of the bots, do you know that Twitter cleared out? They found an algorithm to find out what was a bot or not, and I lost something like 80,000-90,000 followers in a day. Everyone did. But I lost 80,000-90,000. I was like, I really like those followers as well. 80,000-90,000 I lost. Anyway, that's it from us. Oh, no, we've got to do the sponsors. We're sponsored by Cooker. Spelt Cooker, pronounced Cooker. 100-degree boiling hot water from a kitchen tap. I love it. Thank you very much for sponsoring us. It's one of my favourite things. And especially as it's got filtered water, as we know. It's got normal hot and cold water like everyone's tap has in the kitchen. It's got 100-degree boiling hot water, filtered water, now sparkling filtered water.
Delicious.
Which sparkling. Mark drinks so much of that I'm going to have to start charging him soon. It is nice though, isn't it? And also Beer 52, which Mark loves. Tell us about Beer 52, Mark.
Beer52.com/Lovejoy. If you go there, you can claim a free case of beer. You just pay the postage, which is £5.95, and you get a magazine and a snack with that. And what they do is they go around the world bringing you the finest craft ales, and they box them up for you. And as I say, if you want a free box, £5.95, postage and packaging, you can cancel your subscription at any time you like.
Yeah, and we like to have a little beer. And one of the best things to do is you get, how many is it? Eight cans.
Yeah.
Eight tins, cans, yeah. What do you say? Tins, cans,
tins bottles, is a bit bottles, 80s, isn't bottles. It? Tin of beer.
Yeah. Anyway, they calm, and then you can do like I do with Mark, and Mark sometimes does with his dad too. You give half a glass each, or you can just drink the whole lot, and then decide whether you like it or not. It's like a tasting thing. It's fantastic.
Yes. It's good fun.
If you like one of them,
it'd be a really good present as well, I expect.
Yeah. If you like one of them, you can then order it. Yeah. So you can phone them up and order it. Go to beer52.com/.
Lovejoy. This is why we leave it to me, Tim.
Brilliant. That's it for us today. We'll see you all very soon. For the time being, see ya. Bye. Peace and love, Joy.
Bye.